Mr. Young.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Cohen. Your Honors, my name is John Young, and I practice with the Indianapolis law firm of Young & Young. And this is an appeal from a decision of the District Court of the Southern District of Indiana affirming the decision of the Commissioner for the Social Security Administration denying Ms. Castile Social Security disability benefits. Review is de novo but deferential. If substantial evidence supports the decision, then the decision should be affirmed. Substantial evidence is relevant and reasonable minds would accept. Our position, Your Honor, is that the ALJ's decision, and the ALJ, the judge who worked for the Social Security Administration and whose decision the commissioner accepted, made serious factual mistakes when he determined that Ms. Castile could perform the full range of sedentary work. Our position is, Your Honors, that the judge has to build a logical bridge between the facts and the legal conclusion to which he arrives. And in this situation, we believe that two or three examples demonstrate serious questions about the logic that leads to the creation of his decision. There is an incongruity, Your Honors. There is a decision in 2003 in this case. That decision was appealed to the Appeals Council. New evidence was supplied to the Appeals Council, and then a decision was made to remand this matter to the same administrative law judge for decision after consideration of the new evidence. The decision in 2003 was based on the fact that there was no medical evidence supporting the contention that there was fibromyalgia, sleep apnea, or CFS, or chronic fatigue syndrome. In that addition, the judge figured that the obesity that was an issue in that case, of which there was evidence, was not sufficient to rise to the level of severity impairing her ability to perform the full range of sedentary work. Based on those factors, the judge decided that she was restricted to sedentary work, which is a significant restriction, but added to that fact that she was not to have any interaction with the public, and in addition, a very crucial factor, that she was allowed a 1 day per month unexcused absence in addition to all the other absences or vacations that a person would be entitled to. The vocational examiner in that case said, under those circumstances, she was employable. Moved to the 2007 decision, where comprehensive medical records on fibromyalgia, sleep apnea, chronic fatigue syndrome, and additional evidence on obesity were supplied. The administrative law judge stated in his decision in 2007 that although new evidence has been submitted since prior decision, that evidence did not establish additional functional limitations are warranted. So there are no additional limitations, but the incongruity, Your Honors, is the fact that the administrative law judge in 2007, after reviewing all the additional evidence that supported the fact or the disabilities that she alleges, gave her a less restrictive functional capacity. He only restricted her to sedentary work, which of course is a high restriction, but took away the restriction of the 1 day per month for unexcused absence. So gave her a lesser restriction. The fact is, Your Honors, that he has stated in his decision that the evidence did not merit additional restrictions. So why does he then, based on the evidence, say that she is entitled to a lesser restriction? That is not a set of facts that supports the logical construction of that bridge that bridges the decision between the facts and his decision. Excuse me. Taking the two disabling conditions in turn as an example, chronic fatigue syndrome. This was at least argued in the brief and before the district court that the plaintiff or the claimant, the appellant, was saying that the administrative law judge made an error in law simply by failing to analyze CFS, or chronic fatigue syndrome, at step two of the analysis. Although we do agree that the judge should have found that there was severity at step two, our overarching argument is that at every step, including and specifically 4 and 5 of the Social Security process, that the decision should have been made that this was a severe and disabling disease. And we rely on the policy decisions of the Social Security Administration for that argument. First, Your Honors, there was significant medical evidence establishing the presence of CFS. And those can be found in the record between 832 and 834. There is a list of the medical records and the dates of treatment. There was also an argument and a basis for the judge's decision that she did not have CFS because she did not have laboratory findings that established CFS. The policy position...
By the way, use real words instead of initialisms. For people who are not specialists in this field, it would help to follow your argument.
I apologize, Your Honor. Is there something specific that you'd like me to elucidate on that I've previously used?
I want you to avoid using initialisms. That's all.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
CFS, for example.
I'm sorry. Thank you. That's chronic fatigue syndrome. The policy consideration states that lab results are not necessary to establish the presence of chronic fatigue syndrome, but that clinical findings are sufficient if documented in the medical records to establish the presence of chronic fatigue syndrome. The import of that is that the Social Security Administration requires objective evidence of medical conditions in order to make the finding that the condition is severe. Chronic fatigue syndrome is an anomaly, and that's why the administration issued its policy consideration 99-2P and its policy consideration, 99-2P, which we addressed in the brief. That this is a very complex process of varying degree of incidence, duration, and severity that cannot be determined by tests alone. And therefore, it is important to listen to the testimony of the claimant relative to the medical findings to make a determination whether chronic fatigue syndrome will be found. She has made all of the complaints of the 7 or 8 complaints that are listed in the policy consideration for chronic fatigue syndrome. She complained of decreased concentration, sore throats, muscle pain, multi-joint pain, headache, poor sleep, exertional malaise. And in this case, Your Honors, she also was found to have 18 out of 18 tender points, which is also a consideration for fibromyalgia, which is a pain syndrome. But under the policy consideration 99-2P, it states that if there is even a minimal effect as a result of these conditions on her ability to do any work, then the condition must be determined to be severe. I would suggest to you, Your Honors, that her being fired for lack of attendance or failing to complete her assigned job tasks are evidence of at least a minimal effect of these symptoms in order to perform her job. And so, therefore, we say that the evidence does support the finding of chronic fatigue syndrome being severe.
And, however, is not whether the evidence would support such a finding, but whether the evidence compels such a finding. It seems to me there are two possible understanding for your client's inability to, for your client's failure to maintain an attendance record enabling to keep her job. One is that your client is physically unable to do it. The other is your client is irresponsible. Now, why does, and the ALJ chose the second explanation. Why is that not supported by substantial evidence?
I believe, Your Honor, that it is not supported by substantial evidence for two reasons. Number one is her history of employment prior to the onset date of her disability or the disabling conditions, where she worked for 23, 24, 25 years as a contributing member of our society. Number two, these symptoms have been verified and to the extent objectively, and the only ones that could be verified objectively are the trigger points, have been verified in her medical records by her doctor. And from 95 to 2001, you see a decline in her performance over time, firing from several jobs. Now, it can be argued that she is simply hysterical, but I don't believe that that is a reasonable conclusion based on her previous performance and then the existence of these particular symptoms and the concomitant decline in her performance. And so I hope that is an answer to your question, Your Honor.
Hysterical is not the word. The ALJ observed, for example, that one reason for your client's fatigue is sleep apnea, which often causes client fatigue. There's also a good palliative. You wear an appliance at night that keeps your tongue out of the airway, and you don't suffer from sleep apnea. The ALJ observed that your client doesn't wear the appliance. Now, is that a correct observation by the ALJ, or is it your view the record doesn't support that conclusion?
That is an accurate statement of the record, Your Honor. And I believe that her explanation for why she does not wear that is because she can't sleep with it on either. And there's nothing in the medical evidence that supports that wearing this device will allow you to sleep. And I see that my time is up, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Cohen.
May it please the Court, Russell Cohen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I'd first like to point out that at issue here is not the 2003 ALJ's decision, but rather the 2007. I'd also like to address one point about...
I should certainly hope so. The judicial process is slow, but it doesn't take the Southern District of Indiana that long to resolve a Social Security case.
Correct. I'd also like to point out, with respect to her attendance, that most recently she was employed between October 1999 and November 2000, despite complaints at that time of fatigue and her other conditions, and that she alleges disability beginning in March 2001. In her brief, Ms. Castillo makes three arguments that I would like to address in turn. She argues that the ALJ did not properly consider her chronic fatigue syndrome and obesity.
Well, what about Mr. Young's opening point at the argument that the ALJ, even though her condition was worsening, the ALJ, in second opinion, had taken away the restriction that she should have one unexcused absence a month?
The ALJ did not explain why that specific restriction was taken away, but... the totality of the evidence does show that it was supported by substantial evidence. Ms. Castillo,
well, that's not very comforting. Isn't it possible you just forgot? Just made a mistake?
It is possible, but I would assume he's familiar with his own decision.
I don't like those assumptions. Look, judges make slips, right? Like everybody, right?
Yes.
They forget things. So isn't it possible he just forgot that he had imposed this limitation?
It is possible. The ALJ also found, Ms. Castillo also argued that the ALJ incorrectly found their statements regarding her symptoms were less than fully credible. However, the ALJ appropriately found that she was limited to a reduced range of sedentary work based on her chronic fatigue syndrome and obesity. And the ALJ also noted that she worked for many years with both conditions, and there were many...
So was there a vocational expert who testified about the range of jobs she could...
Yes, there was.
But he wasn't told that it had to be a job which would enable her to have one unexcused absence a month.
I don't believe so. It was not relevant, I don't think, for the 2007 decision. Because he did not find that that was an element of her residual functional capacity. And it may be
that... Well, he found it earlier, and what justified his changing his mind?
It could easily be that after reviewing the evidence again, he thought better of that restriction and that it was no longer in his mind.
Well, usually when a judge changes his mind from one opinion to another in the same case, he gives a reason.
That is sometimes true. Here the ALJ did not, but I believe that the ALJ's decision... clearly shows that he considered all of her conditions, and reconsidering her residual functional capacity, arrived at sedentary work with the further restriction that she had no more than superficial contact with supervisors, her coworkers, and the general public. The ALJ noted that she worked for many years with the two conditions that Ms. Castillo argues that were not considered properly, chronic fatigue and obesity. And furthermore, there are no opinions in the record from any doctor that are more restrictive than to sedentary work. Ms. Castillo argues that the ALJ erred in finding that her chronic fatigue syndrome was not a severe impairment. This is irrelevant, as explained in Bradley v. Barnhart, because the ALJ found that she had other impairments and considered all of her impairments together when arriving at the residual functional capacity. The ALJ stated that he considered fatigue in assigning her to the least strenuous level of exertion, sedentary. Ms. Castile argues that fatigue with the other conditions meant that she could not work. But again, there is no opinion limiting her to less than sedentary work by any doctor. The ALJ noted that she had fatigue since at least 1997 and still worked besides it. Ms. Castile actually applied for jobs after her alleged onset of disability date and told a doctor in January 2002 that she was going on 2 interviews. Finally, there were no treatment records for any physical condition in the record after August 2003. Ms. Castile says in her brief that the ALJ ignored evidence after her alleged onset of disability date that may be found in the administrative record at pages 781 through 89, but the ALJ referenced that material. And an examination of the notes showed that none of them specify treatment specifically for chronic fatigue syndrome. One says that chronic fatigue syndrome was aggravated by her poor use of a CPAP machine, that is a continuous positive airway pressure device used for sleep apnea. Another attributed her fatigue to fibromyalgia. Ms. Castile claims that finding it not severe was incorrect under Social Security ruling.
So what is this sleep apnea machine?
As I understand it, it is a device that fits over the face and forces air into your body as you sleep.
Doesn't sound like something very easy to sleep with.
I
would you like a machine on your face pushing air into your mouth?
I've never used one, so I would not know. I know that
it's... Do you think you'd be able to sleep well with that?
I have no idea. I know that it is. I know I would sleep better if I had sleep apnea with one than without it. Ms. Castile claims that the ALJ erred in finding that her chronic fatigue syndrome was not severe under Social Security ruling 99-2 because he based it on laboratory findings. Ms. Castile misunderstands both the ruling and the ALJ's decision. The ALJ found that her chronic fatigue syndrome was a medically determinable impairment. All it takes is either evidence of medical signs or laboratory findings. However, the ALJ found that it was not a severe impairment, in part because it was not bolstered by laboratory findings. In addition, she applied for jobs in 2002, the ALJ says, and she worked for many years with the condition. In her brief, Ms. Castile claimed that...
What did the ALJ mean when he said, "I do not find her allegation of pain and other symptoms entirely credible to the point that they would prevent competitive work"? What is competitive work?
Competitive work, I believe, is as opposed to sheltered work, such as, I think, a workshop for those with...
Oh, you mean that wouldn't count? That wouldn't count.
Correct. I believe under the regulations it wouldn't count. But that, I believe, is what he meant by competitive work. Ms. Castile claims that the term deterioration that the ALJ used was not relevant because her condition waxed and waned. But worsening is entirely relevant in this case because she was able to work with her chronic fatigue beforehand, even when it was at its peak. The ALJ found that her obesity was a severe impairment and explicitly stated that he was limiting her to the least demanding level of exertion because of it. The ALJ noted that there was a lack of evidence documenting functional limitations. Dr. Charmon stated in April 2002 on examination that he found she could walk normally, stand and walk on her heels, and even hop and squat. Dr. Buffy noted in June 2001 that obesity was long-standing since 1987.
What kind of sedentary work did the vocational expert say she could do?
Pardon?
What kind of sedentary work did he think she could do?
He found that she could perform her past work as an order clerk.
What exactly is an order clerk?
An order clerk, as I understand it from the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, is a person that receives in various forms, orders for
like
things.
Like telephone sort of thing?
Perhaps. It could be telephone. It could be pieces of paper. It does not specify which. It states that by a variety of means, that a person would receive orders and then process them. It sounds as though it's a very broad category of work. And she previously did this work, I believe, in 1994 through 95 for a furniture company of some type. Ms. Castile argues that although the ALJ found that it was a severe impairment, the ALJ should have also explained why, in combination with her other impairments, it did not meet or equal a listing. The ALJ, however, did consider her obesity together with the listings for musculoskeletal, cardiovascular, and respiratory impairments, all of which contain in their preambles a discussion of how obesity may affect those types of conditions. To sum up, despite all of her arguments concerning
obesity.
Thank you,
counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Young?
Your Honor, I believe I'm out of time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.